This is the Best Run Podcast. Brought to you by SAP.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's edition of the Best Run Podcast, brought to you by SAP. So today we're going to talk about leading through times of uncertainty with Zina Jalil. Now, Zina's actually assumed leadership roles from a remarkably young age and has helped some of New Zealand's largest businesses to build their reputation and revenue, advised ministers, and supported the growth of Maori and Pacific young people in professional careers. Welcome, Zina.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. Would you want to give some more of a bit of a background about yourself to the listeners?
Yes, so I grew up in Fiji. I moved to New Zealand as a sort of tertiary student, came here to do university studies, studied communications, and then I worked in communications for a couple of years, so in-house and in consultancy in New Zealand. And joined a government agency, and I was very fortunate. This was very early on in my career, probably about, you know, 4 years out of university. And I had the opportunity to take up a role as head of North Asia Marketing and Communications for New Zealand Trade and Enterprise, which is our economic development agency. And it was an amazing time to be there because we were negotiating our free trade agreement with China. So, you know, China's first with a developed country in the world. It was a very historic moment. We had a government which was very keen on developing stronger relationships with North Asian markets, so China, Japan, South Korea. So we were very well resourced, and particularly in that sort of marketing communication space, we were able to do quite cool new things, like, you know, open a retail and information center in Hong Kong. Government agencies don't normally do that kind of thing. We did. We opened a business-to-business center in Shanghai, which is still there. Large-scale cultural and innovation showcases in Japan and Korea. And I was having the time of my life, really. As a young person, you know, being able to sort of be part of working for a cause, I would say, rather than sort of, you know, simply a product or a service, and working with a whole range of different New Zealand businesses while there. But sort of did that for a few years, 3.5 years or so, and then took on a role as New Zealand Trade Commissioner in Singapore. And that was a very different role. It was working more directly with businesses and helping them to enter and grow in Singapore, and then sort of from there into Southeast Asia as well. So working very, very closely on the business development side of things. And following that role, I was appointed Regional Director South and Southeast Asia for Education New Zealand, based in New Delhi. And that was a quite an adventure, both professionally and personally. So, you know, the kind of role where you're pretty much living on planes because you're looking after a large region, but also hugely rewarding because I had come to New Zealand as an international student. And then to be, you know, working for the agency that was responsible for international education. So it never really felt like a job to me. It really, I totally believed, you know, and still do, that my New Zealand education changed the course of my life. So telling that New Zealand education story to prospective students, business partners, governments across the South and Southeast Asia region was hugely rewarding. And then a few years ago, I moved back home to Auckland, left the government roles, worked as a partner in a public affairs firm, and did that for a few years, missed Asia too much, missed the international side of things too much, so then decided that I'd go out on my own. So for the last few years, I have been working for myself. I spend about 50% of my time in governance roles, a number of them in education, including being on the board of Education New Zealand. I do consulting in strategy and stakeholder engagement, and then I do advocacy work around diversity, equity, and inclusion. So it's been a very varied career, but I suppose there's some common themes in there around inclusion, around equity, around helping to create opportunities for those with diverse backgrounds, but also a strong focus on education and economic development.
Now, you've been modest as well, because you're also a beacon from a diversity perspective. You've been a finalist for the New Zealand Women of Influence Awards and also recognised by Campaign Asia Pacific as part of its 2020 Women to Watch. So well done on that, Zina.
Thank you, Jinka.
And actually, I was brought up in Fiji as well. We'll have to chat about that later.
Yeah.
Now, what inspired you to take on your first leadership role?
Well, it's funny, you know, because I think it's, I think in the intro you said something like, I took on leadership roles from a remarkably young age. And I think that was referring more to sort of my professional career. But actually, the question isn't so much a what as a who. And my first leadership role was actually in year one. And my year one teacher was the one who inspired me. So, mm-hmm. So being class captain was a big deal, you know, for a five-year-old. And I loved the responsibility and loved sort of having that control when the teacher was busy and asked me to take charge. And as the years went by, you know, I sought more and more responsibility. But I think the thing with, and I have, you know, children of my own now, and I think the thing with that is that, you know, it's those sort of little moments, you know, early on in your life that play such an important role in sort of the course of, you know, your future and how you see things. So I was, as I say, very, very lucky that someone saw that potential in me and asked me to do something. And then that carried on a journey where I actively sought leadership roles, not just through education, but when I went into work as well.
Yeah, so let's just talk about change and complexity. So there's no doubt that we're living in very uncertain times at the moment. So how is that impacting leaders today? And then what would you consider good leadership in these uncertain times?
Yeah, so, you know, leadership, as you say, it's, you know, like everything, it's evolved and it will continue to evolve. Shifts from an industrial era to today where, you know, in a more in a technology era, we have a more diverse workforce now, and that requires new models of leadership, and particularly a millennial generation growing up in a globalized digital world has very different demands and expectations of leaders. And perhaps more than anything else, COVID-19, you know, more than any other recent event, brought to the fore some of these new leadership traits that are focused on purpose, on inspiration, caring, and compassion. What would previously sort of have been defined as softer skills have become, you know, are seen as very strong skills in leaders. And we're moving from that hierarchical model of leadership to a more collective and distributive style. You know, moving from the leader as hero to the leader being in service of others. And those emerging models focus on empowering leadership amongst a team or a group. We talk a lot more about trust in leadership. We talk a lot more about kindness here in New Zealand. That's sort of, you know, a huge buzzword for our Prime Minister. And again, it sort of started off through the pandemic, but it's here to stay, I feel, in terms of what leaders need to be mindful of and what people expect. So teams are very much focused on purpose these days and looking at how their work delivers to a purpose.
Yeah, exactly. So we actually are very privileged to have you present at our flagship event, which is coming up on the 6th of September in Auckland, and that's called HR Connect. And our theme for that event is Change Work for Good. And, you know, that's all around what you've just discussed in terms of making work a better place and actually fostering the right kind of culture for organisations to thrive. So in your opinion, how do you think leaders can inspire and give people their purpose?
Well, firstly, just to say that I'm really looking forward to HR Connect. There's an amazing lineup of speakers and looking at some of the case studies that will be shared, I think there'll be a lot to learn. So I'm really looking forward to that. In terms of how leaders can inspire purpose, I think leaders play a very important role in articulating vision and strategy. They need to believe in it themselves before they can convince anyone else to buy into it. You know, the leader needs to show people how they play a role in realizing the vision. An incredible power in being able to see how what you are doing, you know, your own role, your own small part of the organization, how that plays a part in achieving something that's much bigger. It gives us all meaning when we can draw that connection. And one of the skills that leaders really need is to be good communicators. They need to be able to role model what good looks like. But at the same time, they have to empower their people so that people can get on with things. And sometimes the best thing that you can do for your team is actually to just get out of the way. You know, you've set the vision. You've provided that direction. You've provided them that empowerment, resource them accordingly. And so get out of the way and just let them get on with it.
Yeah, great advice. Let's just talk about diversity and inclusion. Obviously, that's a key part of leading in the current climate. Can you talk about what the role of diversity and inclusion is?
Yeah, my personal view is that diversity and inclusion plays a huge role in leadership. For starters, because our workforce looks so, so different today than what it did in the past. you know, you think about the large numbers of women in the workforce, you think about our aging population, you think about ethnic diversity, you know, on whatever level you see, there's just so much more diversity in the workforce today. So what research shows us is that diverse and inclusive teams are more creative, they're more innovative, they are more resilient, they're more empathetic. And these are all attributes which are absolutely essential during times of uncertainty. You know, diversity of perspectives, of experiences and backgrounds all contribute to better decision-making. And that's something that's important at all times. But it's especially useful when you're dealing with uncertainty, when there's so many unknowns, when things change so rapidly. And having people who bring different, you know, experiences to the table and are able to share those and have a discussion together just helps you to reach a better decision point. I mean, I sit on a number of boards, and if you kind of think of a board as a team, and that could be any team in an organization, you know, it used to be that people mostly got appointed to boards if you were accountants or lawyers. And that's what most boards were stacked with. But if you think about COVID and you think about the kind of skills that were needed on boards at that time, yes, you need the legal expertise and you need the finance expertise, but you also needed people who could, you know, who could think strategically, who knew about risk management, people who had an understanding of technology because everything suddenly moved online much faster than it ever had. You needed people who were futurist and sort of, you know, had that view of what might be coming. So a whole range of skills. And if you think of, you know, that as a small example of what's happening at the organization level, if you had that diversity of experience, of perspective, it just makes for such a richer conversation, and you're able to bring so much more to problem solving, to identifying opportunities, and to growing your own people. The other thing with diversity and inclusion in terms of leadership is when you have such a diverse group of people within the organization, unless you have an inclusive culture, you're not going to get the best out of them. So to try and kind of force everyone to behave in a certain way, you're losing the richness of the diversity of perspectives that they bring, because they can't really be their full selves. And we all know that when we can't sort of, you know, bring our full selves to the table, we're not bringing the best of us.
Fantastic. So one of the barriers standing in the way of equity is unconscious bias. So can you give us some perspective on how leaders and organizations can create equal opportunities by removing unconscious bias?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a range of things that can be done, but it starts from the top, right? So leaders need to articulate their commitment to equity and inclusion. They need to role model appropriate behaviors and call out those that are unacceptable. At the heart of diversity and inclusion is an organizational culture, and leaders set the tone for that. Unspoken rules about leaders' likes and dislikes can have a much greater impact than what policies say. And other things that leaders can do is, you know, sponsor someone who isn't in their image. It's hard to be what you can't see. And so, you know, people need to see a range of different role models, if you like, making sure that systems don't promote similarity. So that's things like, you know, how you recruit, how you promote, what performance reviews look like. Are they culturally sensitive? You know, biases are real, and we all have them. And often they come from a place of fear, a fear of being displaced somehow, a fear of the unknown. So as leaders, we need to challenge ourselves, and we need to challenge others when we see biases in action. And there's also training available specifically to get a better understanding of unconscious bias and how to manage it. The one thing that I'd say, though, is, you know, there's unconscious bias and then there's just racism and discrimination, right? And understanding the difference between those two is quite important. Often things that are, you know, quite discriminatory get described as unconscious bias, and that's not that shouldn't be the case. But as I say, you know, we've all got biases, and we need to understand where they come from. And sometimes those biases can be coming from a positive place. So, for example, you know, if you hear someone who's studied at an Ivy League institution or studied at, you know, Oxford or Cambridge or whatever, there's a positive bias that goes with that, because you automatically assume that that person must be really, really bright, must be very capable. So you might look differently at opportunities that you might provide them versus someone who maybe didn't go to an institution like that or doesn't have formal education. So bias doesn't always just stem from a negative place or negative stereotypes. It can come from a positive place as well. But it's just understanding how how we've been conditioned ourselves to think about certain things in certain way, and how that then leads to creating inequities in the workforce.
Now, we always talk about diversity and inclusion together, but they're actually very different things. So what's your perspective on this?
Yes, you're right. They are very different things. And I think people automatically assume that, you know, as long as there's diversity, they're fine. But that's not the case, because diversity is who we have, you know. So this is the people you have, and the range of sort of different ways in which you can look at diversity. Commonly, people look at gender and ethnicity, but there's also age, there's sexual orientation, there's physical ability, socioeconomic background, education, and so on. So diversity is who we have. Inclusion is what we do to ensure that people feel respected, that they feel empowered, and that they belong. So inclusion has a lot more to do with culture. Inclusion is what you do to make sure that your diversity actually delivers for you and for your people.
Great answer. Thank you. Now, let's finish up. If there's one professional piece of advice you can give to our audience, what would it be?
You know, one of my favorite quotes to live by is a combination of Rumi and Gandhi, and it's to be the change that you want to see. I think we all get frustrated, you know, in our working lives about things that we are finding hard to do, or projects that aren't going to plan, and all of that. And it's very easy to sort of try and, you know, point fingers at others, and then sometimes deservedly so. But I like to think that, you know, we all have power within ourselves to try and do the things that we can do. And so it's really about being the change that you want to see. I mean, Gandhi said, if we could change ourselves, the tendencies in the world would also change. And my favorite quote from Rumi is, yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I am wise, so I am changing myself. And for me, it's really about that, about working on yourself and doing the things that are within your power to do.
Very sage advice there. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for listening. If you can check out more of the interesting content pieces as part of HR Connect, which will be available on the on-demand library post-event. So you just need to go to Events Finder and look up HR Connect 2022 for ANZ. Thank you very much for joining us, Zina. Really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, listeners. And you've been listening to the Best Run podcast, brought to you by SAP.
You've been listening to the Best Run podcast, brought to you by SAP.